Accession number 28650, Mr. Gordon Mellor, Real 18. Now, you were talking about near Lantern, where you'd made contact with the Van Muren family, and that they in turn had made contact with the local vicar.
Yes.
This is Vicar Adons.
Adons. Yeah.
Now, what happened about this? So, what happened?
Well, the first I was aware that he was coming was a knock on the door. And this was getting fairly well on in the in towards midnight. And they opened the door, and in came this small man, a little man. He wasn't very tall, with cassock and his hat beretta on his head, and beaming all over his face. And he thrust his hand out and said, "Goodbye," which I thought, well, that's my lot. But on the other hand, it did not appear so. He'd mixed it up with hello. And he sat down, and he got a little English. I got a little French. And he explained about the young son. And he said, obviously, if you're here in the morning, then he could see you. He could go to school and say, we've got British airmen in at home. And that could have been so dangerous. That the retribution would have been very swift, I'm sure. So I said, well, I didn't intend to stay the night, but I did need a bit of assistance. So he said, well, you come with me. And amongst other things, he showed that he was a fan of the Arsenal Football Club. He'd actually been over to this country and seen them playing, but that was an inside issue. So he said they got a pass to be out, so it didn't matter whether it was midnight or not as far as he was concerned, but I could be a compromising factor if he was stopped. So we'll go round the back ways, so we did. We went round through the sort of footpaths and what have you, and we eventually came out onto a road. And there was a railway bridge, and when one got through under the railway bridge, there was a big church on the left-hand side, and the manse was opposite. We turned into there, and thankfully not having been met anybody at all, and he took me into his home and introduced me to his housekeeper, the lady who did the cook and all the housekeeping for him. And she was just as welcoming as the other people had been.
Is this also in the Lantern area? Or
no, this church actually is in Elur. He was the priest who was attached to the church opposite. And this was Elur. So that I'd passed from Longtan by various routes. To Ella, he did explain that the Van Meyens had said the road I'd taken and walked through in the rain, both going and coming back, had also been adjoining a German camp, NACAP factory. I saw no sign of it, and I walked through it in ignorance and back again, and they were in ignorance of my passing through there as well. So whether it was on both sides of the road or whether it was just on one side of the road, I couldn't say. I was completely unaware of it. And he said, well, bed. So we went upstairs. He took me into a bedroom. Now I was faced by this massive continental bed, which looked like a... with the mattress and the covers and things on it, looked like a barrage balloon almost. It's all a great big thing. Anyhow, I got undressed and I had a drink of water and got into this magnificent bed and fell asleep. In the morning, he came and I got up and he lent me a razor and some soap and water and hot water to shave and make myself presentable. He had to go about his duties, so he left me at home with the housekeeper. And I spent most of the morning in one of his sitting rooms. I must have had some lunch with him. He came back certainly during the late morning, and said that I would be visited with a lady who would entertain me for the afternoon, keep me company. Well, of course, when she turned up, her English was exceptionally good, and we talked during the afternoon. She knew London and what have you, and she certainly made sure that I was what I who I was saying I was. It was certainly a amongst being a company for the afternoon, it was a check on my authenticity. After she had gone, then he had returned from his duties, and he said, "Well, you'll be moving on tonight. There'll be a man will come for you during the early evening, and you will go with him." And this turned out. This man arrived, and he brought a big raincoat with him, long raincoat with him, which I proceeded to put on, and it certainly covered my uniform up. My trousers, I had the ordinary sort of blue-grey trousers on, so and shoes or boots, I'm not sure which, shoes I expect. And I looked fairly civilian-like, I suppose, provided I did the coat up fairly high. I got a collar and tie on, that looked pretty ordinary. So I said goodbye to him, and we sort of made promises to keep in touch if ever we could. And so goodbye to the housekeeper, and I went off. We went down under the railway bridge to the main road, and there was a tramway there. So we proceeded to wait for a tram with one or two other people, and eventually it came along. The deal was that he would get on and see to the fares, and he would go down to the front of the tram, and I would stay on the back platform, so to speak. Which went all very well. We moved off in the darkness there, and we stopped at various places, and people got on and some got off. And at one of those places, then half a dozen German soldiers got on, and they stayed on the platform with me. So I was sort of wedged in between them. We were getting a bit crowded. They were, I suppose, what you would call squaddies over here. Was a common name, but they were certainly German infantrymen or similar. The next stop further on, which hadn't been very far, we ground to a halt, and there were four German officers waiting there. One of them, the senior of them, got on, and of course as soon as he started getting on, everybody shuffled back, give him room. So he then stood in his solitary spender on the top step there, facing the other three officers, who were seeing him off. And the ding of the bell, and the tram started to move off, at which time he then gave them the arms up Nazi salute, and the three officers all stood to attention with army salutes. And we then proceeded with him standing there. Well, I was just behind him. Three officers must have seen me looking over his shoulder. I hadn't got room to move because of the military men behind me. Anyhow, he just stood there and stayed there. And when I saw my contact get off at the other end of the coach, of the tram, then I got off as well. We were in town,
and this is Liège.
Liège. There was somebody waiting there, a man with another longish coat on, and by signs he indicated we should do a swap, which we did. It was quite dark after the vehicle had moved away, And a third man turned up and come with me. So I went with him. He walked up the street and turned off. I don't know, probably 300 or 400 yards at the most. And suddenly he stopped in front of a typical Belgian townhouse, where the front door was right onto the pavement, and you waited on the pavement, knocked the door, and you waited to be let in, which we did. And there was a lady opened the door, and I was ushered in. The gentleman came in with me, took the coat and put it on over the one he was wearing, and he then disappeared after shaking hands and sort of signs of good luck. The lady took me in and introduced me to her sister, and this was Junia Mathilde Richdorf, and we were in the Rue Warreau. I didn't know at the time, but I found out subsequently about that. But I was introduced to Junia and Mathilde, and they virtually had very little English at all, just a few odd words, sort of come. So I went with one of them into another room. The light wasn't all that strong. They had to keep the lights down so it didn't show outside. And there was a chap there in a suit, rather sallow complexion, darkish. And he said, "I knew it." So I thought, right, you know English. So I said, yes. And he said, I'm Michael Joyce. I said, "All right, how do you do? I'm Gordon Miller." And he said, "You're on the run." I said, "Well, yes, put it like that." So he was ex-RAF too. But then anyhow, we went into another room, and Junior and Mathilde left us on our own to sort of get acquainted.
Now, was he an evader or an ex-POW?
Well, I'll come on to that.
Sorry.
Yeah, okay. He explained that he had been in the country, or he had been in Europe for quite a long time. He had been on a Hampden on a raid, and they'd run out of petrol. They were unsure a bit where they were, so they'd actually come down with not much petrol to spare, and they landed upon Ameland, I think it was, one of the Frisian Isles anyhow, and they didn't succeed in setting fire to the plane very easily, but I think they achieved this. And they thought, well, now the best thing is to get away. And they found they were on an island. And in a short time, they ran into the opposition. And they were all captured. That was the basis of it. And he said they were then taken through to Duleg Luft, I think it probably was. And he'd been in prison camp ever since. A little while before our meeting, he'd been sent out to a farm. He'd been in Poland, as far as I could make out. And the farmer put him up into a room in the roof and locked the door on him. And Mike had had a look out the window and found that there was a sloping roof there. So he'd gone quietly as he could, slid down the roof and dropped to the ground from about first floor level and done a runner from there. And eventually he said, "I'm here," as such. And that was his story at that time. I sort of gave him the gist of what I'd been doing. And I'm not sure whether it was 1940 or 41 that he'd been shot down. We can look it up if necessary, but it wasn't really significant other than the fact it was a long time we'd been a POW. And we went to bed separately, and in the morning he again very kindly lent me his razor to shave and make myself look presentable, Johnny and Mathilde looked after us, fed us, been up very well, really. Certainly it was a joy to eat again. And we had one or two visitors. One of them turned out to be, I would call her a courier. I'm not quite sure what her duties involved, but she had most strong American accent, which I noticed immediately, and thought, oh-ho, why are you still here? Anyhow, apparently she'd been over in Belgium in 1918, after the First World War, and had married a Belgian, and her name was Helen Docteur. Her accent was French was absolutely appalling. I don't know how she got away with it.
It says Nesta Docteur here.
Oh, that was her husband's name, Nesta.
Ah, right, yes, of course, yes.
Sometimes she adapted, or she adopted her husband's name there, I think, and later, post-war, when we got together again, then I got to know her as Helen. And she sort of asked us about ourselves. And again, I think they were checking up. She said, well, arrangements will be made for you. You stay here with Jeanne and Mathilde. There's things that have got to be done yet. And we saw her two or three times. And we saw somebody else came, I'm not sure. And then the photographer came. And Mike and I were taken outside into the back garden, which had been said to us, if there's any trouble with the Germans knocking at the front door, your way out is out the back through this window, French windows type of thing, and through the gardens and away. But round the side of the house was a pair of gates. The house was either end of terrace or end of a pair, I'm not sure now. But he put us up against the gates and proceeded to take photographs of us for the use of identity cards. And those are two of the original photographs which were taken then. We had to wait for them to be processed, but we stayed a couple more nights, I suppose.
Now these photographs were for forged identity cards, I presume, were they?
Yes. Whether the cards themselves were forged or whether they were acquired from real sources, I can't tell you for sure. But they looked genuine to me, and I suspect that they were. It was just that they were blank ones when they were acquired, and our photographs and details were put in. Now, I'm not sure what name they gave me.
Maurice.
Oh yes, I was Maurice at that time. That's right. I'm not sure about the rest of the bit. Anyhow, these were given to us. I'd got some Belgian money there, so that was in my pocket. So that was not too bad. And we just spent the time together. I was a bit dubious about his name, but to start with, when he first said who he was, I thought, that's familiar. And now I thought, the names are names in the Air Force. Most names are repeats all over the place, and sometimes you get two people on the same station with the same surname. So I thought, nothing more about it, really. And I just knew him as Mike, and that was it. Eventually, we said, right, well, after lunch, you're off.
So you'd only been there a couple of days?
Well, we weren't there more than the first night when it was two. We were there at the most with three nights. It might even have been just the two nights. The timing is rather lost on me, that's for sure. But it was certainly no more than that. And we had Oh yes, they also gave us work permits, I think it was, and saying what our trades were.
What were you?
I think I was a mechanic of some sort, mechanician. And not mid, just after midday, smart lady turned up. I should say early 40s, she was very attractive. We said goodbye to Julie and Mathilde, and we went off with her. We were told that we were going to take a tram, and we would then go by train to Brussels. And we thought, right, this is a giant step forward. And we walked down in broad daylight. This rather smart lady with two fellas. We'd been given suits to wear. I'm not sure whether I got a top coat or not. The weather was quite mild anyhow, so it wouldn't be unusual for us to be seen in a suit or a casual wear. And we went down close to the stop where the tram stop where we had come in. And we got on the tram and went to a suburb called Ans, A-N-S, walked through into the station. And it was deserted. There was a ticket chap in the office there, and the lady got tickets for the three of us. We weren't given any names at all. I got to know Helen Nesta Doctor's name, but certainly I didn't get the name of this one. And subsequently, I was told she was called the Dove. But no more of that later, perhaps. We were sort of had to wait for the train. I think we were late, so we missed the train. As I say, there was nobody waiting. So we sort of sat in the waiting room there, which was also the main hall of the station where people passed through to get to the platform. And we had a newspaper, and we sat and talked low-voiced. And then a few soldiers came in and went onto the platform, and then a few more and a few more, and a lot more came. And there was a mixture of officers passing backwards and forwards. I thought some of them were Luftwaffe, but they were mainly in field grey, and they all looked very busy with themselves, so we just sat in the corner in the shadows, and nobody took any notice of us. And eventually, the lady known as the Dove, we gave us the nod, and we got up and walked onto the platform, and we were immediately surrounded by vast number of military. It looked a lot. Anyhow, the platform was crowded. There weren't many civilians there. Anyhow, the train pulled in, and the military disappeared. There was obviously reserved carriages for them, and they all got on, and we got onto this the civilian part and found three seats in a compartment, and we were off. Opposite us was a corpulent lady and one or two other people, and a rather a small man in the far corner. Now, he viewed us with suspicion because we sort of sat there and, with the woman. And Mike and I sat together, and me in the corner, and then Mike, and then the lady with our backs to the train, and the other, I think there was four on each side. Anyhow, the large lady proceeded to put a cloth on her knees and bring food out and sort of carve into a loaf, and she was offering food all round, and we just sort of said no thanks, and tried to not get ourselves engaged in any sort of conversation. This chap on the far corner, though, looked at us with suspicion all the way through. The trade sped on through the countryside. We sort of pretended to drop off to sleep now and again, but we eventually came to Louvain, where we had to change trains. It's not far out of Liège, perhaps half an hour, 25 minutes. Anyhow, we had to change trains, which we did, onto a local. And we ran into Brussels North, I think it was called. We got out of the train, and it was a general crowd. I think we dumped the military at Louvain, or they'd gone on somewhere and we'd left them. Anyhow, we just passed through the barriers without any problem. And now it gets very hazy. We went out of the station. Now, what we did then, I cannot remember. I've been back to the North Station. I've been looking around there, and none of it seems familiar. I know the station's been rebuilt. But in essence, we went somewhere. There was nobody to meet us at the station, so there must have been an alternative meeting place, which we went to. And there was nobody there. So there was a park nearby with a long tree-lined walk. The lady left us there and said, walk up and down, and I'll come back to you. Now, whether this was a local difficulty she had to overcome, or whether they were just trying us out to make sure we didn't do anything which would give us away, I don't know. Anyhow, Mike and I walked up and down this path. There were quite a lot of other people taking the air in the sort of late-ish afternoon, and we walked up and down quite a few times. There was an odd once or twice, there were people that came along, big heavy fellas, looked like plain close police or serious people. And I said to Mike, I don't like the look of these two coming up. So he said, no, neither do I. So we sort of looked at our watches and nodded and turned around and walked back, and so that we got away from them. Even they went out one of the gates. Whether that was an unnecessary move or not, I don't know. Anyhow, the lady came back and she said, we're still having a bit of trouble, but come on, we'll see what we can do. And they said, what would have happened if you'd, you know, left us and not come back? Or you thought that we were unreliable. So she said, well, I should probably have taken you into that church over there, and said, you hang on here, and you would be met. And she said, I would have left you there, and then you would have been on your own. So we said, oh, fair enough. Anyhow, we went to an underground area, like a miniature Piccadilly Circus, with a walkway round. The only thing, there was no railway there as far as I could tell, but there were telephone boxes in the middle, and there were mini shops in the circle around. So it was a small shopping precinct of that time. And she again left us and went on the telephone and left us standing there. Well, I noticed a shop to the right where it said, basically it said, you may telephone from here, the same as they used to put signs up in this country. And